Hey, everybody. This is Mega Ran, and you're listening to Random Encounters, a short podcast where I normally talk about lessons that I've learned. Most of my episodes, at least the last few, have been a little on the, I guess, kind of somber side. So I figured why not for this episode go the opposite way by having a comedian join me today on Random Encounters. So today, my special guest is Mike Kaplan. He and I met through some strange circumstances that we'll talk about. And I'm going to sit down and give him an opportunity to tell you a little bit about himself and hopefully some gems, tips, and tools he's learned along the way. We are currently on a boat. We are docked at Half Moon Cay in the Bahamas and should be, fingers crossed, going home tomorrow. So, Mike, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Of course.
We did this a few days ago. So I wanted to make sure we do maybe some similarities, but something a little different as well. So for my podcast, I'm usually telling stories. And these stories usually end with like me learning a lesson or sometimes not.
Sure.
And I can remember being at a point where, first of all, what do you do? Tell the people what you do.
I am a stand-up comedian.
Awesome, awesome. So let's talk a little bit about how we met.
Sure.
We did meet through a mutual friend, Chaz Kangas. I was in Minneapolis for a convention. You were there recording an album?
Or? I believe that is what I was doing at the time at Acme Comedy Club.
Nice.
Or Acme Comedy Company, I think maybe their official title. But yeah, I was performing there for a week from like Tuesday through Saturday and recording the majority of those shows for my most recent slash next, depending when as of right now, you and I talking, it is to come out in May of 2020.
Okay. This should be out before then.
So that's cool. Perfect.
All right. So tell me a little bit then about the process of recording a comedy album. So you're recording for a week.
Yes.
For one single special.
Yes.
So you're kind of getting the best takes, the best runs, the best reactions. Like, how's that work? Like, how do you figure out, especially a week-long recording process, how do you figure out what makes the cut?
Well, for this particular hour show that I was recording, I was doing essentially the same, you know, show night after night. And I think we recorded four shows. Mm-hmm. And I did, like, maybe two or three other ones in advance that were kind of, you know, like Tuesday, Wednesday, getting in shape for the weekend when the larger audiences and the more warmed up me would show up. But I've been working on that hour of comedy for probably like between like 2 and 3 years. I brought it to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in the summer of 2018 and did it there like 25 times in a row. And that kind of, it was in shape before that to get it there. But that, you know, sort of really like made me have a degree of comfort with it and it got it sort of into its final, in its finalist shape. So when I then, a few months later, came to Minneapolis to record it, I knew what I was going to do, and the goal was then to do it in front of as many quantity of quality audiences as possible, and then just as you either surmised or guessed or knew, we listened back, myself and my girlfriend, who knows the show very well, came to Edinburgh with me and was sort of instrumental in saying, oh, you said that one different this time than you did another time, and I think it's better for these reasons when you do this. And then also my producer, Dominic, who is putting the album out on his record label, Blonde Medicine. Nice. And so we all listened to it, and then he sort of came up with his he was like, this one seems like the best one. Like, I think there was like one show that had like, you know, the most explosive responses, you know, maybe probably like one of the Saturday shows or okay. One of the shows was clearly like had the largest reaction, though. My girlfriend Rini, she was like, that I one of my favorite performances of yours wasn't necessarily that one. It might have been the show after that one where I was like, okay, we got it, and then I could, you know, relax and, mm-hmm. you know, be more natural, be more myself, as opposed to, you know, it's not like I was just like, oh yeah, we gotta get this show, we gotta get it down, oh boy. But maybe there was, you know, some there, I was like, well, if we didn't get what we wanted, then we wouldn't release it. But The goal, like we all listened back and made our decisions about which portions of each show. And I think, you know, one ends up being kind of like the skeleton and be like, oh, but this was better over here and this was better over here. And then it becomes kind of a fun, like, jigsaw puzzle type situation. Where, you know, kind of fun to just listen to myself say the same things for an hour, day after day, week after week for a little while. But I'd say before this hour, like previous albums that I'd recorded were not necessarily as structured, like so similar. Like there might have been some things that I recorded that I think for like an album I made in like 2012, 2013, I also recorded at Acme in Minneapolis. And I think I did probably like some nights, the early shows I did 50 minutes and the late shows I did 70 minutes. So it wasn't the exact same thing the whole time. And by the end of it, I might have had like an hour and a half's worth of material. And I went through that and decided, I was like, this is the 45 minutes that I want this album to be. And then I had almost another album's worth of stuff ready so that I then was able to record a special with that and some more stuff the next year. So it's sort of like an ongoing, evolving process, a combination of, you know, planning in advance to see what I want it to be, and then after the fact, like, sort of prescribing it, like, it's gonna go like this, and then afterwards be like, what did we get, like, describing, like, this is what it turned out to be.
Right. Okay. Why Minneapolis? Is there a particular reason?
That comedy club, Acme, has been just one of my favorites to perform in. My understanding of why that might be, why the club is so good, the owner has been there, you know, with that club for a few decades now, I think. They treat the audience as well. They treat comedians well. Like, there's no drink minimums like they have a lot of comedy clubs. There's food in the building, but not in the showroom. So there's no, like, clinking of silverware and things. It's just the art form of comedy is, like, revered and respected in this way. And because of, I think, that, they've gotten a high caliber of comedian, like, over the course of the years they've been there. Like, you know, Maria Bamford has gone there many times, and, you know, being from that area, and just some, like, tons of others of, like, my favorite comedians. So when I started, after I did Last Comic Standing in 2010, and the day after I found out where I placed, which was, I didn't win, but I found out how exactly I didn't win, but I was in the top five, and the final night of our performance was like a Monday night, and it would have been great to, like, win and then zoom off, but either way, I zoomed off the next day, that Tuesday, to Acme to do my first headlining weekend there. And people now came out because they just see me on this show. And it just sort of, I had a personal experience that was commensurate with all that I'd heard about that club. Like, there's certain, it's strange because, you know, it's a building in a city. There's probably people in the city that would love it, and there's other people that wouldn't love it, but, you know, whatever it is, that that mishmash, that algorithm that that gets people to a place where they will enjoy the experience of the thing, of the artist, the person that's going to be there. So I've performed at that club in Minneapolis over the past decade at least 5, 6, 7 times, and had already done, did one album there because of the great time that I'd had the last time I'd been there, and then because of that experience, I think I have probably maybe like 4 or 5 stand-up albums that I've recorded, mostly in different places. This is the first time that I've gone back to the same place, and it was just because of the knowledge that the people of Minneapolis in the building of Acme were such that they thus far now have given me like 2 wonderful data points of that kind of recording and comedic audience experience. I think it may be, I know that Minneapolis is a very artsy town. Yeah. I know that I live in New York City, where there's, I understand, fewer theaters per capita than the Minneapolis area. Minneapolis, really? A large city, but more theaters per person.
Wow. So, I don't think I knew that. That's awesome.
So that's the kind of, that's the environment that I chose for that reason.
It is a great town for the arts. I've noticed that even when I've come through to play shows, it feels different, feels special there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they know how to treat the arts, I guess, and to appreciate them. All right, so I'm going to get into 2 major questions, things that I always tackle on this podcast.
Please.
It's like one low and one high, usually.
Oh, sure.
So is there a moment you can remember as a comedian, or maybe figuring out this whole process where you hit a point that was, I don't want to say rock bottom, but like the lowest low, that, and do you recall this moment, and what's it look like?
Sure. I mean, I think it's hard as a comedian to pick one lowest low, because when you're starting out in comedy, it's, and maybe this is true in hip hop as well, but I do know I'm also a musician, and I know that as a musician, you can create your art in private. You can, you know, get good at an instrument if you're playing an instrument without somebody seeing you practice that instrument. You can, you know, sing in the shower, you can sing at home, sing into the mirror, and you can do that with comedy. But in stand-up, like, it's failing in public is part of the process in a way that is like a part and parcel of the process, more so than with almost a, like, nobody tells a ballerina, like, you're definitely going to have to fall on your face a lot in front of, you know, this many people to know how to move your foot, you know. You can learn how to move your foot and then bring it to a public venue. So there's so many shows when I was starting out where I had sort of a delusional self-confidence, which helped me get into it to begin with. And I also did understand that there were going to be shows that I would call, like, objectively bad, that there was so many. So it's hard to even, I wouldn't even consider, I think my girlfriend and I were just talking recently about, we watched some of the open mic comedians, people on this cruise going on stage for the first time at some small events. And we talked about the idea of that if you're just starting out, it doesn't even make sense to call it bombing, because I guess the analogy that I thought of is, like, if you're on the floor lying down, like, you can't fall. You can't fall down if you weren't even standing up yet.
That's true.
And so the beginning, you're just trying to, you know, like a baby deer, I guess, being like, do my legs even work? Do I even have legs? The one show that I remember thinking about specifically, when some people ask for, like, what's the, you know, the worst show that you've ever had, or was definitely like several years, maybe like 5 or 6 years in, and I was opening for Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Wow.
And it was a theater in the round, like outdoor, like under a tent, like summer night, like 7 p.m., like daylight, you know, time for comedy. Comedy doesn't particularly thrive necessarily with, the sun's out, we could be tanning. Yeah. But okay. And, you know, in a situation, one of the worst situations for comedy is for people to not specifically be there for you or even for your art form. Like, you know, you go to see a music performance, if there's a band you like, you know, there might be a band that you've never heard of before. Maybe they're usually, if it's a big band, if it's a big act, like, probably the opening act is good, because to even get the opportunity as someone who's unknown to perform on the same show as somebody who's known. Like, some of my friends, you know, have performed for, like, especially if it's like there's some amazing comedians who have amazing opening acts, and there's some, like, famous comedians who aren't even necessarily the most famous for comedy, might be a movie star or something, and then their opening act might be better than them.
Yeah.
And so in this case, that wasn't what their audience thought. I think they just needed me to be, they needed somebody, they couldn't have another band because the size of the stage was such that only their equipment fit. And they're like, nobody else is using our equipment, I assume. And so just, we need somebody who's like, can stand still as the stage rotates.
I've gotten hip hop gigs in that way.
Oh, sure.
Can you stay out of the way? Can you just show up, grab a microphone and entertain us for a few minutes and not need an entire band to do so? So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even sure why. Like, what the it's sort of just the formulaic, like, oh, an opening act, you know, even though I was to go on from like 7 to 7:30, then there'd be a half hour of intermission, and then the band would come out. So I was opening for intermission was opening for the band. And just, you know, people were still coming in. The people that were there weren't necessarily listening. They were talking. I was like I said, the stage was rotating. So I'm like starting one joke to a bunch of people who aren't necessarily interested, finishing it to a whole bunch of other people who weren't even, like, I wasn't even facing initially.
Boy.
Like, some people were yelling things. Like, the joke is, I don't know if people actually yelled, get down tonight, but that would have been a nice, I can tell if they were requesting the band come out and play or me. But like, it's a multi-faceted heckle. One woman, a young woman, an 8-year-old girl. I learned because I talked to her and her family that that was her age. I could not tell, but she gave me a thumbs down as I went by, which
thumbs down.
I think is a my friend Ken Reed is a comedian in Boston, and he wrote a joke a long time ago, just a story that he told about the worst heckle he had ever seen. And he's like, the worst heckle I could ever imagine is just a thumbs down, because like, how do you even argue against that? Just like, turn your own thumb up.
Yeah.
And so that was his imagination that came true for me, which I do think it's kind of the worst, because you can, I was definitely going to see it. You know, like somebody yells something out, you might not even be like, what was that? Ah, never
mistake
mind.
It for something else.
Yeah, I can interpret that different, but a thumbs down, unmistakable. Mm. But it's kind of nice, because at least it didn't interrupt the audio flow of what was going on. She's
absolutely.
Just like, I understand that you're doing what you're doing. at about 25 minutes of my 30-minute set, I feel like I was like, let me level with you, audience that doesn't particularly care for me to be here. I was hired to do 25 to 30 minutes of comedy. Maybe it was a few minutes before the 25-minute point. Mm-hmm. I was like, just to let you know, I understand you might want me to do less. So I was like, if you guys stop yelling things out, then I'll only do 25 minutes. But if you keep yelling things out, then I'll do my full 30 minutes. So do we have a deal? And they did not accept my deal. So I stayed up there and until about 29 minutes. And I think I drove home from Cape Cod, where it was, to New York, where I think I lived at the time. I forget if I had moved from Boston, but I had at least an hour and a half to multi-hour drive home. Mm. To, you know, not quite, I wasn't like, am I doing the right thing? Like, I mean, even, you know, when taking a step back, like, it was not a fun time. It was not why I got into comedy. If every gig was like that, I would be like, why would anyone do comedy? Like, it's right. Nice to have that, you know, that end of the spectrum, like, compared to also the other times, like gigs like the ones that we've had on this cruise, like, where the audience is here precisely because they know, if not who we are exactly. Like, I definitely have some people who are my fans who were like, I was so excited to see you coming on this cruise because you're a great fit for this community. And then even if the people didn't know me, that, like, it's true. It's like, the thing that I do has resonated with this community, the same as I'm sure you've experienced.
Likewise,
like,
yeah.
We didn't have to, like, some people are like, it seems like you might have, you know, like, you understood what was, like, what the people here are about. Like, perhaps, I mean, they're like, did you observe it just in the day before you performed? Or did you, like I assume your jokes, like, most of my jokes were written before I got here and just happened to be, like, a good fit for the kind of, you know, weirdo that's on this boat. And so it's important to have both experiences so that, you know, you don't get too high on any particular horse, and you don't like, just stay and be like, I don't think there's ever even been a horse. Like, what is riding? Do I have legs? I'm just a legless deer. And I remember just having that experience and thinking, like, but objectively speaking, you know, I was making my living doing comedy, I think either by that point or I was about to be. I was more and more on my way to doing that. And I remember thinking, like, well, you know, I just got paid $400 to have people yell at me for half an hour, and that's, like, a pretty good rate, you know? Like, it's better than a cubicle.
That's true. They get paid a lot less to get yelled at
for
more than half an hour. So, yeah, I guess mainly when I was going into that, worst show is, I figured, a question you probably get a ton
of. Oh, yeah.
So I wanted mainly
I'm happy
those
to go
soul-crushing defeats. You know what I mean? So even if it's not a show, like, for me, if someone were to ask me, it's a moment where it wasn't a show. I was just at a point in my life that I didn't enjoy. You know, I was working two jobs. I had just gotten out of school. I'm working as a teacher during the day, and at night I'm working at Toys R Us doing stocking. Now, you might think Toys R Us, greatest job ever. It was really fun. We got to, like, throw footballs and hop on skateboards, you know. But there was just a moment where I was going into the studio as well between that. So that was almost like a third job, you know, working on my first album. And I just didn't have enough time in the day to do all the things I wanted to do.
Sure.
And I remember pulling up after teaching a long day at school, you know, being yelled at, then to put on my red smock and head over to Toys R Us. And I remember being in the parking lot and, you know, maybe 10 minutes before I had to go in and clock in. And I'm just like, this isn't what I thought I'd, you know, signed up for. Like, I'm a college graduate. Like, why am I doing all this to myself? You know? And I just got so frustrated with that moment. So it wasn't even necessarily a terrible show.
Sure.
Lord knows I've had a ton of those. But it was just a frustration with life and just kind of knowing that it was time for a change. You know, like, all right, I got to figure something out because I got all these things in my life that I'd rather be doing. You know, so did you have a moment like that where there was a time where you're like, I got to make time for this stuff I really want to do?
Yeah, I think gradually over the course of my life, even before being a performer, like I've always been a person who wanted to like maximize the life experience, like do all of the things possible, you know, whether it's take in all of the media of a certain kind, which is impossible because, or even take in the best of it. Like it's, you know, even you can't read all of the books and listen to all the podcasts and enjoy all the musical artists and watch all the comedy, like, and then also, you know, all of the sunsets and friendships and meditative peaceful moments
and cruises.
Yeah.
Many things.
You can't have all of the internet and also none of the internet at once. I remember like being in college and like I just started performing, or at least performing like music, like as an aspiring singer-songwriter, and some of my songs were funny, and I was performing like throughout college at my coffee house on campus and some open mics around Boston where I was in school. And I'd been doing it at my summer camp, and that at that like music performing became like my first desired, you know, job, you know, like a dream goal of like a, you know, like I, you know, who knows, like a reach school, like I'm going to apply to singer songwriting, and like if I don't get in, I guess, you know, teaching or psychology or whatever else, you know, I can do that's like a job with a name that you've heard of. And so I remember being in college and I was trying to get a math major, and then math got hard. So I was like, I'll stick with the math minor that I've already gotten on the way to trying to get the math major. But that was sort of, I'd always been like, quote unquote, good in school. And like math had been like one of my, I was like, oh, I'm a math guy. and then I was like, oh, I guess there's a limit. I was like, I've learned about limits in math and I've reached mine. And I was like, I guess I'm not a math guy anymore. So that piece sort of like fell into the distance of my identity. And I did enjoy like philosophy that I was, you know, majoring in as well. And I'm like, but I don't know that there's a specific career path forward in that. My parents were teachers. I thought about getting an education degree, but then I was like, maybe I'll teach math. But I was like, oh, maybe that won't happen. I applied to Teach for America. I didn't get into Teach for America. I was singing in like a chamber choir at school. I was also singing in an a cappella group called Voicemail, in all
Voicemail.
Male. Oh yeah.
Ah.
They did a good job.
That's good.
And yeah, that was a fantastic time. And I was having a good time in college, but I was also approaching the end of college and I didn't want to go to more school. But I also didn't know what I wanted my life to be, but I didn't know how to get from where I was to there. And I felt like I was being, I think the maximization ideals that I had to try and do everything were actually like pulling me in all different directions, like five different directions. I was like, I could head this way or this way or this way or this way or this way. And I was sort of like immobile in the middle.
I'm going to stop there, but don't worry, there will be a part two of my interview with Mike Kaplan, my first ever guest on Random Encounters. That's coming next week. In the meantime, I asked my Twitter followers, you can hit me there at Megaran. I asked everybody about social distancing and what it meant to them and what they would be doing a little differently in this new era that's suddenly upon us. And I got some great responses. The first one is a voicemail from my man, DJ Canto.
Yo, what up, Megaran? It's DJ Canto representing the Bay Area. Kind of Funny Best Friends. What's up? You were asking about what our plans are for social distancing on this COVID-19 thing. And for me, it's all about self-improvement. Like, this is a time to focus on myself and work on issues I've got. Personally, for me, is my weight. So, you know, I've got my Ring Fit Adventure, got that locked down, ready to become a master. I've got Yoga with Adrian on YouTube, ready to go. I've got resistance bands, weight, some kettlebells, yoga mat. I'm ready to go. And then, you know, everything in my house, like, I'm going to be here. So I might as well finally organize everything. Like, get it the way I really want it. figure it out. I got the time, you know? But that's it for me, man. Just like staying clean, wash my hands, you know, cook my own meals. I got my own food. I'm good to go. You know, and I send out a good vibes to everyone else out there, you know? Social distance, flatten that curve, stay at home. Peace out.
Well, it goes without saying that we're in some crazy times right now. So I just want to thank you all for staying positive, protecting yourself and others, and for your continued support. You can find me at patreon.com/megaran or megaran.com. You can get merch at megaranmerch.com. And of course, you can get music at megaranmusic.com. All right, y'all. Be good. See you next time.